Welcome to Season 17 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go! Welcome back, Season 17, moving right along. One of the most popular questions I get asked is, what are these five leader profiles? What does it mean if I'm a manager, or I'm a ruler, or I'm a dabbler, or I'm a pleaser, or I'm a welder? There's no better person to have on the show than my colleague Mark Houston, and we're going to dig into the five leadership profiles that are part of the Welder Leader Assessment. We're going to talk about what it looks like if you're which profile, and most importantly, leadership being a journey and not a destination. So regardless of what profile you might have gotten in your free leadership assessment, you can become a better leader tomorrow, or you can become worse. So we're going to go through each profile and what you can do to be more like a welder leader, those that simultaneously use high levels of love and discipline in how they lead. So without further ado, here is my interesting conversation with my friend, Mark Houston.
Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here, John.
Second time. Second time on the show?
It is. Second time.
This time we're going to be talking about something pretty important, because we get asked a lot of questions about this assessment that people take. What is this welder leader assessment? Where did it come from? These five profiles that you have, what do they mean? Does it really matter what profile I am? I mean, these are questions I get all the time. And so we're going to really be digging into it today to help people understand a little bit more about the Welder Leader Assessment, what it means, and what they can do to be more like a welder.
Yeah.
I want to start at the very beginning, and that is we were out really looking for what do the best leaders actually do. And everybody knows that listens to the show that I'm a big sports fan. And so there are just many proud college football programs in the country that have just rabid fan bases with what most would consider unrealistic expectations. So almost like a football team for you, right? A soccer team.
Right.
And Clemson University is a really small town in South Carolina, and it absolutely falls into this category. They had this really long and storied history that included a national championship all the way back in 1981. And then there was this 15-year period where the program was just nothing more than average. I mean, they went basically 500 football. People started having this nickname called Clemsoning when a better team would lose to a worse team. And so as someone that like grew up around this team and this university, because all of my family went there, I always paid close attention to them.
Right.
And in 2008, they made a decision to fire kind of an experienced coach named Tommy Bowden and hire an inexperienced coach named Dabo Swinney. And a lot of these rabid Clemson fans were like, what is this? Who's this guy? We need this big name coach. Mm-hmm. But the athletic director at the time, named Terry Don Phillips, just believed in this guy because he had seen him, and he had seen the way he worked, and he had seen the way he led. And for anybody that follows college football, they now know that Dabo Swinney has completely transformed this average college football program to now one of the premier college football programs in the country. So much so that they've gone to three straight college football playoffs. They've won a national championship, and they're just exceptional. And so when we were doing research about what the best leaders do, I went to a Clemson football game, and I met an author named John Gordon, who I'd really been looking up to a while. We've had him on the show. And so I asked John Gordon at a tailgate in person, I said, what makes this guy Dabo Swinney such a special leader? Mm-hmm. And without hesitation, John looked at me and he said, I've never seen a guy that uses love and discipline like him. I've never seen a guy that uses love and discipline like him. And I just, those two words just stuck in my head, because as a parent, much like you,
yeah,
you know, you battle that. How much do you love your kids, and how much discipline do you provide? And then as a leader of a company, how much love you provide to people, but how much discipline you provide. I mean, I feel like there's always been this balancing act that leaders have to go through. And so I remember texting the team that night, and I said, we're going to go do as much research about these two words as we possibly could.
I remember it well.
And then at that time, the first person that we looked at obviously was Dabo, mm-hmm. just to see if we could look for things that were happening where he exposed this. And the first example that we came up with in 2015 that we found was the first time Clemson went to a college football playoffs, Dabo suspended his star wide receiver and five other players for the college football playoffs. I mean, this was the biggest game in the history of the university. And he suspended his players. And that rabid fan base was just up in arms.
Bold move.
Bold move. But Dabo didn't care. He knew he was there to serve his players' hearts and not their talents. And he publicly said, if these players, specifically Deion Kane, which is somebody what people are most upset about, if Deion chooses to come back and meet the standards set by the program, then he can play on our team next year. But he's not going to play in this game in this college football playoffs.
Laying down the law there.
Laying down the law. 1 year later, they went on to lose that college football playoff game. 1 year later, they were back in the college football playoffs. This time, Deion Kane had chosen to meet the team standards set by Dabo and the coaching staff. He played an instrumental role in their national championship victory that year over Alabama. And at the end of that game, a microphone was put right in front of Dabo Swinney, and he looked right into the camera on national TV, and he said, I told the team the difference in this game was going to be love. So we have two different examples, right? We have, in 2015, what most would be considered a perfect example of him using discipline as a leader with his team, and then 1 year later, using that four-letter word on national television. It kind of blew my mind, right? And we did so much research, started doing research beyond Dabo, but Dabo just provided an example like that where he used both mm-hmm. really well and at similar times.
Yeah.
And it really got us thinking that maybe the best leaders actually do simultaneously use high levels of love and discipline in the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to define what we mean by both of those things. So when we talk about love, we define it as your ability to contribute to someone's long-term success and well-being. And when we talk about discipline, we define it as your ability to promote standards in order for an individual to choose to be at their best.
Let's dig in. Let's dig into love.
Okay.
The definition, to contribute to someone's long-term success and well-being.
Correct.
Most people think love is a feeling.
Yeah.
But what we found is love really isn't, I mean, it can be a feeling, but that to contribute to someone's long-term success and well-being is, it's more of a choice that we make, isn't it?
Yeah. It's about caring for another individual, another group of people beyond just yourself and just beyond a feeling.
Not just because you like the person or because you hired them or because they act or sound like you, but because your actions, you choose to love them. You choose to contribute to their long-term success and well-being. Because we know that can be difficult, right?
Absolutely. It can be very difficult to care about the people that you work with or the people that you work for. If you're able to think long-term and actually care about their long-term success and their long-term well-being and mean it in a genuine, sincere manner, it's fantastic. But it can be difficult because we don't always get to choose who we work with and who works around us. And we also, you know, when you think about the people that you love and that you care about, you a lot of the time you are able to really think about who those people are and able to choose who those people are. Whereas when you're talking about your team, you may have many different personality types, you may have many different backgrounds, and it can be a very It can be a very diverse team. So being able to care about each and every one of them individually is a very difficult thing to be able to do.
And then your actions back that up through choosing to act that way, right? If you look at what Dabo did, even though we use the example of when he suspended his wide receiver, Deion Kane, as an example of discipline to promote standards in order for an individual to choose to be at their best, he actually showed great love and cared about his long-term success and well-being by suspending him for that game, because he knew that if he let him play in that game for his own benefit, he wasn't doing what was ultimately best for that player's long-term in their life.
Yeah.
Thinking about it way down the road, when he's a dad, when he's in the NFL, when he's, you know, running a business, you know, by showing him that he's not bigger than the system.
Yeah.
He's not bigger than the standard set for the program.
If he had allowed him to play, it would have been a short-term gain for a long-term stain, I would say.
Yeah, no, it's true.
It really would.
He was looking out for his long-term success and well-being by using discipline.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think that's where the example is so great. You also mentioned the word discipline and defining it. And I reinforced it there. To promote standards in order for an individual to choose to be at their best.
Yeah, and that's a key word there, choose to be at their best. So when you think about standards, and we think about how we define standards is what good looks like, you want an individual to come into work every day or into training every day and want to be at their best, not because they know if they don't, they're going to get into trouble, or if they don't, there's going to be some sort of punitive measure delivered against them, but because they want to reach those standards and they want to reach those expectations and they want to go further and push harder. And so really having those standards in place and having them choose to be at their best is what's really important.
And I think most people can resonate. We have a lot of parents that listen to the show. Most people can resonate. When it's your kid's choice, they tend to do things much more willingly and much more because they think it's their idea. Because they're doing it. They're choosing to do it. But when you tell them they have to do it, you're usually met with what? I don't want to do it. Yeah. No. Right? So the same goes here from leading a team at work. When you set a high bar or a standard defining what good looks like, and then you allow your people to choose to meet and exceed them, you get a completely different response from people.
Absolutely.
And then obviously holding people accountable to what those standards are is really paramount on the back end from a leadership perspective, because we know at times people fall short. But the point is that you can't choose for your people.
You cannot.
What you can do is set a really high bar and set those standards in order for them to choose to meet or exceed the standards that you've set.
Absolutely. And if people aren't meeting those standards, and not to get into the weeds too much, but that's where as a leader you have to step in and you have to kind of dissect why. Why are they not meeting standards? Why are they not choosing to be at their best? Is it a will issue? Is it a skill issue? Do I need to go down? What type of accountability route do I need to go down? How can I help them?
Provide coaching,
support them? You know, are they motivated? Really looking at what's going on and why are they choosing not to meet that standard?
Yeah, and the standard might be too high. I mean, it's always looking in the mirror. Different ways to look at it. So as you think if you've taken the assessment on the website or the free assessment, you can kind of understand where all of this came from. And so then we really dug into our research. We've now done over 25,000 assessments of leaders and organizations, both self and self-assessed, and then those assessed by their team. We dug into some work in the 1960s from a guy named Blake and Mouton, who really looked at something called the managerial grid that looked at effective leadership through the eyes of a concern for people and a concern for production. And they had this kind of grid, and it looked like love on one axis and it looked like discipline on another. And so we took what they did and we modeled it. And then, you know, obviously we built questions around it. And now we've just, we, with clear certainty at this point, mm-hmm. you can say that those leaders that simultaneously use high levels of love and discipline are the most effective leaders in organizations.
Absolutely.
And so then the natural question is, obviously, not everybody falls in this upper right-hand quadrant, what we call a welder. You know, people fall all over the board. They fall in different profiles.
Yeah.
And so what I want to do now is I want to dig in to each of the five profiles, a manager, those that score low in love, low in discipline, a ruler, those that score high in discipline, low in love, a pleaser, those that score high in love, low in discipline, a dabbler, those that score right in the middle, and then those that score high in love, high in discipline, what we call a welder leader. Mm-hmm. Let's dig into each one a little bit. So depending on what profile you might have gotten, if you've taken the assessment, you might want to know, what does this mean? Let's start with a manager.
Okay. So when I'm talking about a manager here, I'm going to use this an extreme example. Right, so I'm going to talk about a manager who has used no love and no discipline. So if you got your result and you saw you were a manager, chances are you probably had a score, for love and discipline. Right, so there's varying degrees of being a manager. And if you engage with our assessment, if you take the report, if you have your team complete the assessment about you, you would kind of see what those degrees are. But what I'm going to talk about right now is kind of the lowest love and lowest discipline manager that you could get. Typically a manager doesn't inspire their team through any sort of vision or any sort of leadership, for want of a better term.
They're thinking about themselves.
They are. They're thinking about themselves. And they're manager in title alone. They tend to really just focus solely on execution. They don't really have much of a day-to-day relationship with their team members. And they can direct people rather than coaching them and developing them. And like I said, in terms of the vision, they can be very much short-sighted about what's going on within the organization.
I always like to think of it like you always can know you either work for a manager or you are a manager if a team is just ready to go at like 4:30, mm-hmm. you know, 4:45. They're like right. ready to go. Or when that person talks, they say, I.
Yeah.
You know, when something good happens, they give themselves all the recognition mm-hmm. versus giving it to other people.
People tend to work for them rather than following them, right?
Yeah. Or so, even with them.
Yeah. Right? Their people are just employees who aren't assets to the company. They're just commodities to be used and discarded. We found some examples of leaders who have shown this type of profile at some point in their careers. And one of the ones that really stood out to us was Travis Kalanick, the ex-CEO of Uber, right? So if you're not familiar with Travis Kalanick, he's no longer, as I say, the CEO of Uber, and he had quite a tumultuous past in his role. And one of the most famous incidents that went viral was he took an Uber, as you'd expect, and the driver was talking to him, and the driver was asking him about pay, about conditions, about just, you know, what is going on with the business in terms of a frontline employee of Uber, right? A driver. And Travis, as he was answering the guy, started to get really wound up, started to berate him, kind of went off on him a little bit, didn't listen to what he had to say, and very much treated him very poorly, showed that he just didn't care about the guy, right? Zero love going on there. And that blew up, went viral, as I say, and kind of showed his true colors a little bit. And then other instances of Uber and Travis Kalanick's leadership kind of failing and showing low discipline would be there was a a lot of scandal around harassment at work, around sexual harassment,
favoritism.
Leaders were talking smack about their people, were talking smack about their leaders. There was this aggressive culture of eat or be eaten. And it came down to a complete lack of leadership from the CEO, Travis, him not holding people accountable, not setting standards, not following up with people, not following through, not having any values or vision, not really modeling the way himself. And so you kind of see in those two examples how that kind of epitomizes what a manager is like, an extreme manager. I want to point that out. Someone who uses absolutely no love and absolutely no discipline with their team.
Yeah, it's a great example. And then you can see the difference today with a new CEO, with a new vision, you see all the commercials all the time now, mm-hmm. and the performance has started to improve. I mean, there's a concern. I think they say do what's right always, yeah. right? So there's a difference in styles, and you can see that the performance beginning to improve, the employee engagement improving, those things.
Yeah, and if you got a manager as your profile, it doesn't mean that is you. You know, we really believe that leadership is a journey. All the aspects of leadership we believe are skills. And skills can be improved over time through practice, through learning, and you can sharpen those skills, hone those skills, and improve your leadership. So if anyone's listening to this and being like, oh, I was a manager, but I'm not all those things that you just mentioned about Travis. Yeah, absolutely. You probably aren't. We're talking about extreme examples of being a manager.
And if you are a manager, you can get better. And in every profile we talk about, you can take this to the bank. Leadership is a journey and not a destination. I mean, I want you to write that down. I want you to take out Evernote, get out a pad, and commit that verse to memory. Leadership is not a destination. It's a journey. You'll get better and you can get worse. And that is okay. Now let's move on to the next one. We talked about ruler. A ruler mm-hmm. being a profile that uses primarily discipline and load love.
Exactly. So a ruler loves processes. They want things done their way. It's kind of their way or the highway. My way or the highway, should I say?
Power. They love power.
They love power. They don't really get to know their direct reports, don't really build relationships, don't find out anything about them. And they're not averse to conflict when their power is being threatened or their control is being threatened. Typically what we see with these types of teams who have a ruler, and again, an extreme ruler as a leader, is they tend to get burnt out quickly because a ruler just is all about that set rule book.
Very rigid.
Yeah, they only think there's one way to do things. They can get good or bad results very quickly, but as we say, burnout is pretty high. And team members can feel like they're not being heard, they're not being thought about, their thoughts and feelings aren't being taken into consideration, and they can be very much a leader who leads from his high tower and looking down on his people.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot in the past, which is if you had to choose mm-hmm. whether you were gonna, you're starting in a brand new role, being ruler or leaning on the discipline is not always the worst thing, particularly when you get in a new role. You always can scale down the rules and mm-hmm. show more care and love for people. It's not ideal. You would ideally do both at really high levels. But if you're starting in a new role, I think it's the beginning of the school year. So teachers, if you're a teacher and you come in showing all love, no structure, no standards, no discipline, the chances of you losing your classroom are much greater than if you start on the other end of the spectrum and you find your way to the middle.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So it's something to keep in mind. It's not all a negative thing here. Who's an example of a ruler that comes to mind?
Well, the I got a couple of examples. The first one was Miranda Priestly in Devil Wears Prada. You ever seen that movie?
I've been dragged to that movie.
Yeah. So if you've ever seen that movie, she was, very cold with her people. Didn't build relationships with them. Didn't really get to know them that well. All she cared about was results. And then the other example that we have is a guy called Sepp Blatter. So any football, soccer fans out there, he's the ex-president of FIFA. And he very much ruled FIFA like a dictatorship, right? So my way or the highway. And there was a lot of people who disliked what he was doing, but they feared him, so they were very reluctant to air any sort of grievances. And he, like I say, he ruled with an iron fist and got things done the way he wanted to do them. Ultimately, he was forced out and has been replaced. But right there, you can see two examples of people who are your extreme rulers.
Let's move on to let's go to the pleaser. So go to the other end of the spectrum. High in love.
Okay.
Low in discipline.
Yeah, so a pleaser prefers harmony, doesn't like conflict, doesn't like feeling awkward or any sort of discomfort.
Are they comfortable in the position of leadership, do you think?
They probably are to a degree. However, if they have to make tough decisions, they can struggle. They put more emphasis on the people that they work with, kind of keeping them happy, than actually getting results, right? So if there's questionable behavior going on or poor work ethic, they probably won't say anything in an effort to protect people's feelings. And they're probably well-liked and well-loved by their direct reports, but they probably don't motivate them that much because they're just seen as like almost like another person within the team.
A pushover a little bit?
Maybe a pushover, yeah. Maybe more like a peer, a friend. They can be often passed over for promotions or taken advantage of by their direct reports because they're a little bit too easy.
Not quite the respect level that...
Correct, yeah, correct. So, and when we think about an example of this, one of the examples that we came up with was Neville Chamberlain, right? Mm. So ex-Prime Minister of...
You might need to give a history lesson.
Yeah, ex-Prime Minister of Great Britain who was during World War II, seen to cozy up to Hitler... came up with the Munich Agreement, which was seen to appease Hitler rather than kind of confront him about, obviously, the atrocities that had been going on, and was very, very unwilling to get into a conflict with Hitler.
Even though it was wrong.
Even though what he was doing was wrong. And so in history has judged him as being, kind of a bit of a pushover, just for that one action. And then, of course, you have Winston Churchill that came in and...
give me the speech. Yeah. Just a little bit of...
Well, he said, we'll fight them on the beaches, we'll fight them on the land, yada, yada, yada.
With little more energy.
Yeah. I don't want to do it a disservice by trying to replicate the speech. But,
your accent would be perfect.
So, you see those two extreme examples between Neville Chamberlain and Winston Churchill, but that kind of... process of not being willing to stand in the moment, not being willing to stand up and confront something that they see in front of them is kind of the extreme example of a pleaser. So, when we look at it from a...
And the team kind of underperforms altogether. I mean, right. On the extreme.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they can't get performance, but they're certainly not reaching to what the talent level is of the team.
Exactly. And maybe they haven't set standards, and so the team's unaware of what those standards are, and so it has a knock-on effect of they then struggle to coach and develop their people, they then struggle to maintain accountability with their people, they've maybe never set a clear vision. So
kind of feels really... like they fall into the friend zone a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Their leader in, again, kind of more of a name-only leader.
Let's move to the most popular profile, the dabbler, right in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. They're not bad leaders. They're good leaders. They're just not great leaders.
Yeah, this is a real... So they have a very solid foundation, right? So if you're a dabbler, you do use equal parts love and discipline. You probably just don't do it, or you don't do it consistently enough or effectively enough. So you're balancing love and discipline if you're a dabbler. You just need to use more of it and more consistently across your team. So a dabbler can be kind of a chameleon, you know, and they can adapt themselves to the different positions or different situations and scenarios they find themselves in. And they definitely have good intentions. However, they probably are a little bit comfortable in their role. They don't push themselves and don't stretch themselves, or probably don't stretch their team as much as they should do. And so if a dabbler who is a good leader, like you say, wants to become a great leader or wilder leader, they need to be able to set new levels of expectations and really push themselves further and push their team further to be able to reach those new levels. And like I say, they probably struggle to maintain a little bit of consistency with their team across the board.
Yeah, and these people, I mean, you know, when you look, they've gotten to the roles that they're in because they were either good contributors themselves. These teams even often meet,
yeah,
you know, the goals, but they rarely like blow it out of the, you know, they rarely, like, to use a football analogy, they typically don't win national championships.
Yeah.
Like, they might win a conference championship, or they might, you know, beat a good team occasionally, but then they lose to a bad team.
Yeah.
These are the consistency is not there every week, but it's not like they're bad.
Yeah, right? And this is why it's hard to find examples of these famous people who fall into this category, because they're not ever famous. They don't really ever stand out in any way. They're just middle of the road. It's just another leader. And so it can be hard to come up with an example.
Who's your favorite that you've come up with?
Well, I have a couple. First of all, I have Michael Scott from The Office. And if anyone's never seen The Office, they should watch it. But Michael Scott, although he probably leans slightly more towards being a pleaser, he does get results from his team, and he does get to know his team.
He said something in the show like,
"Would you rather be feared or loved?" I want them to fear how much they love me.
Yeah, both.
So, I mean, he is an example of a leader that he never really got amazing results from his team, but he did get results from his team. And then more of a kind of company perspective that I like to use as an example is Radio Shack. Right, so Radio Shack, they turned into a dabbler because they tried to be everything to every single person, and they couldn't really decide what they wanted to be. They were that chameleon, and then they ended up going out of business. And so they never really pushed themselves and concentrated on certain aspects.
And because most people that take it or have their team take it fall into this bucket.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is a dabbler, should they feel good about that? Should they feel bad about that?
No, I think if you come out as a dabbler, that suggests that you have a very strong foundation. There may be just specific areas, specific competencies that you need to work on to take yourself to the next level.
So not something that you should beat yourself up on or think that you're not good enough. We just have room for improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think you should beat yourself up if you get any of these profiles. They're all, you know, they all come with certain levels of strength. And like we say, we're talking about real extreme examples here. But I guarantee that everyone who's taken our assessment, if they were to see which competencies they scored well at and which competencies they needed help with, they would see that, okay, you know, I do have strengths, and there are things that I'm good at. But on the same side, you know, there are also things that I can work on as well.
Well, let's touch on the welder.
Okay.
Those that score high in love, high in discipline.
Yeah.
They use them simultaneously at high levels, exactly where my man Dabo Sweeney would fall. What do welders do really well?
Well, welders motivate. They inspire. They galvanize teams.
They serve.
They create effective teams, and they create more leaders. You know, they have deep relationships with their direct reports, and you know, they're able to sustain long-term success and results. So not only are they respected and liked within their team because of the levels of love and discipline that they're using, but they also create more leaders by people who emulate their leadership. And it inspires that longevity of their kind of legacy, if you will.
And you can always think to like, almost like coaching trees, mm-hmm. you know, for any sports fan. You know, if you look at Coach Krzyzewski at Duke, he's got 20 plus head coaches now that used to work for him.
Right.
Like, this guy is not just hoarding talent for himself. In fact, he's by helping them get ready to lead themselves,
yeah.
people are attracted to go work there because they know that's exactly what's going to happen with them.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things where, you know, the old quote, it's kind of famous now, which is leaders create more leaders. They don't create more followers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what welders do so well. I mean, mm-hmm. because they care so deeply about the development of their people and their success,
yeah.
that they're just constantly pouring into their people. Absolutely. And trying to get them to become the very best version they can be. And I think there's something very special about having someone in your life that is just pouring into you as often as they can.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the examples that we came up with, both Scottish men. my father's Scottish, so yeah, both pulled from Scotland. The first being William Wallace, who, as if anyone has seen Braveheart, they know what a great leader he was. He had a vision. He inspired his people. He cared about his people.
He battled on the front lines.
He was on the front lines with them. He wasn't standing back on his horse, covered in plate armor, not wanting to get involved. He was right there fighting with them, getting his, rolling up his sleeves. And he created a legacy.
I am William Wallace.
Yeah, he created a legacy that people followed. And he was very respected and cared about.
Revered. People. I mean, just yeah. he was almost mythical. He is, really.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, the whole freedom vision for Scotland was what people got behind, and people saw the bigger picture.
Who else do you have?
So the other person I have was Alex Ferguson. Mm. So any football fans?
Soccer.
Manchester United manager. I was Manchester United manager for 26 years, won everything basically there was to win, was known at the start of his career as a bit of a disciplinarian, but then kind of moved more towards being that kind of father figure for his players. And he managed some of the best players in the world, Cristiano Ronaldo, Wayne Rooney, to name a couple. And these players both understood that he cared about them, but he also had high standards for them. And so even now, these players talk about him like he was their father, but also in the same kind of sentence, we'll talk about how he demanded more from them all the time. Mm-hmm. Demanded that, you know, they train at the highest level. They never let standards slip. They always go out there and want to win, regardless of how long's left on the clock. They're just constantly striving to be the best. And it was really interesting that when he retired as Manchester United manager, the same group of players didn't perform as well, right? So he won the league 1 year, or Manchester United won the league 1 year. He retires, basically the same team, new manager comes in, and with the same personnel, they didn't win the league, and they didn't come even close to winning the league. And it really
shows you the power of leadership.
Shows you the power of leadership. Like, what was he doing that the new manager wasn't doing? Like, what? How did he conduct himself that the new manager wasn't able to replicate? And it really goes to show you that a strong leader will bring out the best in people.
Well, the natural question, the question we get all the time, which is, well, can anybody become a welder leader? Is that only for special people that are born, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think that age-old question, are leaders born or made, is something that comes up all the time. And when we do workshops, when we're giving speeches, you know, when you ask people are born or made, you almost get 50-50 every time.
Yeah.
There was some research done by Leadership Quarterly And what it found was that 76% of a person from a leadership perspective is learned. 24% is DNA. So what that tells me is that everybody, mm-hmm. whether they're born with some of that special DNA or not, everybody can become a better leader. Yeah. And because we've talked about leadership being a journey and not a destination, and these profiles aren't what you are forever, you can get better. You can become more like a welder leader. There are things that you can do to be a better leader, not just for yourself, but more importantly, for your people.
Exactly. And on the flip side of that, if you aren't using your skills, if you aren't doing the things that you need to do and practicing and honing those skills, they can be dulled over time and you can regress. It's a constant process of reflecting, of learning, of practicing, of implementing the skills needed to be a high-performing leader.
Well, this has been great. I mean, I think giving people the background, giving people what each profile really means, mm-hmm. if you've taken the assessment, we're super grateful.
Yeah.
If you've joined the Ultimate Leadership Academy, you've gone on your own outside of your company to help develop your leadership skills, we're grateful. If you're part of a company that we've gotten the opportunity to touch or impact, we're grateful. And if we get the opportunity to do that in the future, we look forward to that opportunity. We hope these things today can help put some of this stuff into perspective. When you've either taken the free assessment or you're curious about how you're leading today, think of that high level. How much are you using love and discipline in your leadership? How much are you contributing to someone's long-term success and well-being while at the same time setting standards in order for an individual to choose to be at their best? How are you doing that at work? How are you doing that at home? Think about it. These are really important questions that we all ask ourselves, and that most importantly, that we go apply. Because knowledge by itself does nothing. It's in wisdom where we're able to apply these things where the real gold is. So I hope these things have been able to help you today, not just for the short term, but for the long term on your leadership journey. Mark, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Thanks for joining us on another week of the show. If you like this, do me a favor and share it with a colleague or a friend, or leave a comment, review, and recommendation wherever you listen to podcasts. Anything that would help us spread the message of leadership, it would mean a great deal to me in my